Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. I'm Jeanette.
And I am Emily. We are super excited to be back. Last episode was a collab.
I know, a super fun collab. If y'all haven't listened to it yet already, it's our most recent episode. It's so cute, so fun. Y'all will definitely enjoy it.
Oh, definitely. It was so much fun to do, and I'm so glad. Thank you again to Ghosty Girls for letting us interview you.
Yes, thank y'all.
So,
but going back to us, how was your week, Emily?
It was good. David started teaching, which is awesome. Although
so exciting.
It's all like online right now, so he it was just kind of strange for him, but he's super excited. He's doing very well. What about you?
I'm doing great. I just went back to school shopping because I finally signed up for my classes.
Congratulations.
And, like, I'm doing the whole payment plan and everything. I'm super stoked about it.
Okay.
I know. I bought a whiteboard today so I can get my stuff together.
Whoa.
I know, right? I'm going to write everything I need to do on this whiteboard.
Good for you.
I'm pretty excited about it.
I bet.
But that's really, besides like, getting ready for school, I've just been going to work. Nothing too crazy.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
Well, the good news is, after today, we don't have to talk about Ted Bundy for a while. So,
we're done with Ted Bundy after this, guys.
Yeah.
We don't have to hear about his cruel mind.
Be prepared for this to be a longer episode, but not too much longer, because David has a meeting at 3:30. So,
true. It'll be like
cannot make it normal
episode.
Yeah, probably. So, we're going to really go through it. So, one of the things that I did do is I did get the book, The Phantom Prince, by Elizabeth Kendall, who, if you haven't listened to our previous episodes, she was the long-term girlfriend of Ted Bundy. So, yeah. Okay. They did have kind of like an off and on thing, and there is a specific passage that I did want to read from the book, or actually two different passages. And I can go ahead and get started with those, but before we get started, I do want to let you all know that we do have a YouTube channel now and a Patreon.
Yes, it's very true. Very true. Yes. Yes, we do have a YouTube channel now, guys, and a Patreon. Please check it out. I mean, YouTube is obviously free, so go check that out immediately.
Right.
But yes,
and that is also where you can listen without an ad at the beginning as well.
Yes, so. That's very true. So check that out. Also, the Patreon, if you want to, did you want to describe it a little bit for them, Emily?
Yes. So our Patreon is only going to have one tier, and I believe it's $5 a month. I honestly cannot remember. It's been a little bit since I've worked on it. We don't have anything on there yet. But it will be definitely, I don't know, coming forward.
Okay. But yes, guys, we're getting that ready for y'all. And then YouTube is already ready for y'all. So go check that out.
It is.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff happening behind the scenes. It's kind of crazy. It's like picking up very quickly.
Oh, definitely. And it's a lot.
Which we're excited about. Don't worry. We love every single one of y'all, and we're super stoked about it.
Absolutely.
Yes, there is a lot of stuff behind the scenes. So
a lot. So go subscribe to our YouTube channel as well.
Yes, please.
Oh, did you really quickly, did you see my tweet about episode 10 on the YouTube channel?
No. I haven't been on Twitter, actually.
Okay. Well, basically, there was something that happened with my audio file, and so it just sounds like a bunch of aliens talking about Eileen Wuornos.
Oh, no.
And so I need to fix that. But before I do fix it, if you guys want to listen to a bunch of aliens, go listen to episode 10 on our YouTube channel.
sounds pretty exciting, honestly.
Oh, definitely.
It fits our aesthetic, you know, spooky.
Aliens? Yeah.
Aliens are pretty spooky to me.
They are. No, I'm terrified of aliens.
There it is.
All right. Well, shall we get started?
Yes, of course. Let's listen to the rest of Ted Bundy.
So I am going to start off, like I said, with a couple of quotes from the book The Phantom Prince, My Life with Ted Bundy. So this book was written by Elizabeth Kendall, his long-term girlfriend. They were together for over 5 years, I believe. And, well, obviously her name is not her name, as I had said before, but I did want to read a couple of quotes from it. One of the things that she said, well, this wasn't actually one of the quotes that I'm reading, but she did say that she could count the times in which Ted was violent to her on two different fingers. So that proves that he truly was like a different person with her than he was in general.
Oh, yeah.
Which is absolutely terrifying because that's just the way that it works. Yeah.
So crazy.
So here is the second quote. This is before the book even began. This is in the preface. One of the people who read the book in manuscript and said something that disturbed me. You're asking people to feel sorry for you. My God, people died. You're one of the lucky ones. You lived. I want to answer that. Never did I forget real women had been murdered for no other reason than they were attractive and friendly. The hideous reality of their deaths became my reality, too. Their tragedy was my trauma. For a long time, I lived with the guilt of wondering if Ted saw me in these women, if killing them was a sick, compulsive effort to kill something he hated in me. I am thankful to have survived, thankful for the chance to work my problems through, thankful for the resiliency God gives humans.
Ish.
I absolutely cannot fathom someone saying that to her.
I know. Like,
oh my gosh.
That is, oh my goodness.
It is true. She is lucky. She did live, but it's terrifying. Most definitely. Yeah.
It is still scary.
Yeah.
Like, what?
For sure. So, yeah. So that was the first one. And this second one is kind of like an example in when he did get kind of angry and violent for seemingly no reason. So a little bit of a background is that they were planning on getting married. This was in, I believe, 1972 or 1971, which was before the killings specifically began. Because if you recall, it had started in 1974 with a few unconfirmed things that happened before. Okay, so let me just read this to you. A few days later, Ted and I were walking from my office to the parking lot. My parents were coming soon for a visit, and I had hoped we would get married while they were here. I told Ted that we should move his clothes out of my closet before they came because I didn't want them to know that we were practically living together. Ted thought that was childish. You're a grown woman, Liz. You have a daughter of your own and a life for your own. For God's sake, grow up. When we got to the car, he put his briefcase on the hood, opened the case, took out the marriage license, and said, if you're that hung up on what your parents think, then you're not ready to get married. Let's forget the whole thing. He tore the license up in little pieces and threw them on the ground. Then he turned and walked away. I stared at his back, not believing what had happened. I looked at the pieces of the marriage license on the ground as if they were vomit, sick of myself for pushing and pushing until I had pushed the man I loved right out of my life. So, yeah.
My goodness.
It wasn't that violent, but it was aggressive, you know?
Right.
And by reading the book, which, by the way, if anyone wants to know more about Ted Bundy and about, like, who he was, this is a really great book to pick up because it did show the kind of person that he was other than the killings, which wasn't the person that he was, you know?
Right. Two different people completely.
Yes, definitely. I realized I've kind of made it sound like he was the good person. That's not what I meant at
all. No,
no, no. He was a terrible person.
It's just the other side of the story.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, let's get into the terrifyingness of today. Now, as usual, we do have a general trigger warning on this, and today we are going to talk about children as well. I will, of course, say before I start talking about it, I will say that again. That way it's not, yeah. All right, shall we?
We shall.
So, do you remember the Carol Duranche that we talked about last week?
Yes.
Okay. So, just to recap for everyone that didn't know, she was going back to her car whenever a policeman walked up to her with the name, he said that his name was Rosalind, I believe his name was, I honestly remember, I believe his name was Rosalind, Officer Rosalind, and she asked for some identification, and he produced a police badge, to which she was like, okay, then that has to be you, right? And then, yeah, he kidnapped her, basically. And she got out of it alive, which is incredible. She put up such a fight to where he actually handcuffed both of her hands, or I'm sorry, one of her wrists with both handcuffs. So, truly a badass. So she had, what was that? I'm sorry.
Sorry, I just said it's so horrible. Just like, ugh.
I know. It's terrifying.
Yeah, anyways, go on. Ignore my mumbles of me being sad, so.
Well, mumble louder. It's okay. We all want to hear. So she actually had reported her kidnapping, which is what ultimately led to his arrest in August of 1975. So, last week we talked about all of the 1974 murders, so here we are now with the 1975 and so on murders. So on January 12th, 1975, Karen Campbell vanished from a ski resort in Colorado while she was on vacation with her fiancé and his two children. A month later, her nude body was found a short distance from the road. An examination of her remains determined that she had received violent blows to her head, and over the next few months, five more women were found dead in Colorado with similar contusions to their head, which seems like it was the result of being hit by a crowbar.
Oh my goodness. Oh my gosh.
We're really starting out rough. I apologize. So,
you're really diving headfirst, aren't you?
Part three. We got to get this done.
It's true. I mean,
I'm all sick of looking at Ted Bundy's face. I mean, I did not like looking at him before.
I guess it makes sense. You're not really diving head first because it's a continuation, so.
Yeah. Well, if you're listening to this and you haven't listened to the first two parts, please go listen to at least the first part.
Spoiler alert, he's evil.
I think they may have gotten that from the first thing I said there. I'd at least hope so.
Right? Like, my goodness. That has to be so, evil.
Yeah, if someone heard that and they were like, yes, that is normal, I would be like, please do not talk to me ever again. Thank you.
Yeah, good.
All right, so now Julie Cunningham. This happened on March 15th, so just a little bit over 2 months after Karen Campbell. Bundy had approached her while she was walking. I'm sorry, whenever she was walking to a dinner date, when she was walking from her apartment, and he had approached her with his crutches. As I'm sure you remember, he would often go up to women who, well, you know, fit his, what he wanted, and he would have crutches on, or he would have an,
which is disgusting, definitely.
Yes. Which is long, dark hair parted in the middle for the most part. Yeah. So, he approached her with crutches, which was like his thing. He would try to be wounded because, you know, he knew that he was handsome. This is something that he very much knew. And then he asked for help to carry ski boots to his car. And there he clubbed and handcuffed her.
He then proceeded to assault her and strangle her at a secondary location near Rifle, which was 90 miles west of where she was. So Denise Lynn Oliverson, she was 25, and she, I don't have a date for this one. Okay, well, it was in between March 15th and May 6th.
All right, good dates.
There you go.
In between.
In between then. She disappeared near the Utah and Colorado border on April 6th. I do have it. It's right there. It was just further in the notes than I was anticipating. My goodness. All right. So
I'm so glad you found it.
I was just casually reading the sentence from my notes and
I know you're like, was, I don't know so. The date. And then you stated the date.
Okay. So it's April 6th. My goodness. Okay. So she disappeared near the Utah-Colorado border on April 6th while she was riding her bicycle to her parents' house. Her bike and sandals were found underneath a railroad bridge. So something that I read, I believe in Anne Rule's book, but I didn't go through and find this case in her book, is that she had had an argument with her husband. And she was biking to her parents' house to get away from him for a little bit. So that's really sad. So next we're going to talk about Lynette Dawn Culver. So this one is going to have an intense trigger warning on it. So Bundy lured her out of her junior high school, which was Alameda Junior High School, which was in Pocatello, Idaho, which was about 160 miles north of Salt Lake City. So she was only 12 at the time. A child. A baby, yes. Yeah. To put in perspective, Jeanette, that's younger than Mia.
I know. I always... It's so sad to think of it this way, but when yeah. we... like think of or talk about ages and stuff, I always compare the age to Mia and I'm like, oh no, Mia.
I know. Yeah, no, I end up doing the same thing and then I'm like, okay, no, I don't want to think about that.
It's so sad.
For listeners, that is my little sister who is 14 years old. Oh my gosh. Okay, I need to stop thinking about my sister while I'm talking about Ted Bundy. Okay, that's going to make me incredibly sad. Okay, yes. So he lured her out of her junior high school, and then he ended up kidnapping her and taking him to a hotel room where he drowned her in the bathtub and sexually assaulted her. He then disposed of her body in the river north of Pocatello. Yeah.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
This is all horrible.
I know. I know.
I respond this like that. I so sad.
Yeah, it's so sad. Okay, well, don't worry. I won't talk about another murder for just a second. You have a minute.
Goodness.
It's okay. So you watched the movie, right? The one with Zac Efron in it?
Oh, yes, I did.
Okay. So we're about to talk about Carol Ann Boone. Do you remember who that was?
Yes, that was the girl who, like, was in love with him, right?
Yeah.
In
that's
jail?
Her. Mm-hmm. So okay, she's going to come into play now. So she was one of these three coworkers that ended up visiting him in Salt Lake City and stayed for a week in the apartment. So before that, he had spent a week with Liz in June, and they had discussed getting married in the following Christmas. So if you remember, I know that we talked about this, but Liz had called Ted Bundy into the police because remember with the Lake Sammamish killings, he fully introduced himself as Ted. And so they were looking for a Ted that drove the tan Volkswagen. And so she was like, well, crap, that's exactly him. So he ended up she ended up calling him in, and so did Anne Rule, by the way. So he ended up being on the suspect list of three different lists he matched. He was on, wow, words are very hard. So there were a lot of different suspect lists, and his name was listed 3 different times on them out of 10,000 names.
So, okay.
Mm-hmm. So he was apparently, he ended up kind of having kind of like a relationship with Carol Ann Boone. And he also ended up having relationships with Kim Andrews and Sharon Auer, who were Utah law students. So I'm sorry, we're back to sadness. I deeply apologize.
God, it's so hard to stay off of sadness, though, when it comes to him, so whatever.
I know. It's okay. There is a happy ending to this, whereas he gets killed. So I don't want to say it's a happy ending, because this is obviously a terrifying and sad story, but at least he dies.
True.
That's a plus. So on June 28th, Susan Curtis vanished from the campus of Brigham Young University in Provo, which was 45 miles south of Salt Lake City. And her murder became one of Bundy's last confession and tape-recorded moments before he entered the execution chamber. So the bodies of Julie, Denise, Lynette, I'm so sorry. I missed one of the names. I did not. And Susan, they were never recovered.
Oh, that's just so sad.
I know. It really
There's
is.
So many.
I know. He, in the end, there were 36 that he fully, like, admitted to, but it's definitely thought that there were more. Which, yeah. And you'll hear at the end, he begins to just basically talk because he's like, okay, well, I'm not getting out of this.
Right.
And I mean, as you can imagine, like, these serial killers are absolutely psychopathic. They're proud of what they did.
Yeah, I was
so
about to
they
say,
want to brag.
When he starts confessing to things, he's like, oh, I'm so glad I finally get to tell you. Like, this is how I did this. Basically.
Yeah, he's, like, proud of it, which is how a lot of serial killers are.
Disgusting.
Absolutely. John Wayne Gacy is actually another example of that. He did something very similar. All right, so in Washington State, investigators were still struggling to analyze the Pacific Northwest murder spree because it had ended as abruptly as it began. So as you'll realize, Ted will go somewhere. Murders will start happening. And then, whenever he leaves, they stop.
Oh, how shocking.
I know. I wouldn't have known. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so. Here, I'm just going to read this part word for word, because this kind of explains more of the list thing that I was talking about.
Okay.
In an effort to make sense of an overwhelming mass of data, they resorted then innovative strategy into a compiling a database. They used the King County payroll computer, a huge primitive machine by contemporary standards, but then only one available for their use. After inputting many names they had compiled, classmates and acquaintances of each victim, Volkswagen owners named Ted, known sex offenders, and so on, they queried the computer for coincidences. Out of thousands of names, 26 turned up on 4 separate lists. One was Ted Bundy. Detectives also compiled a list of their 100 best suspects, and Bundy was on that list as well. He was literally top of the pile of suspects when word came from Utah of his arrest. So, basically, you shouldn't have said your name. Dumbass. Yeah, at this point, he was getting too proud, you know? He was like, oh, well, I did all of this. Like, I can get away with it. So now, it's going to get wild. So,
it's
on August...
wild. Hello, Emily.
Yes, that is true. You're absolutely not wrong. It has been wild. So, on August 16th, 1975, he was arrested in a high residential area. Do you want to know why he was arrested?
Yes.
Well, I was going to tell you anyway.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. He was arrested for not stopping after being ordered by a police officer.
Wow.
Because he was speeding. Mm-hmm. So, the officer searched his car because obviously he was acting suspicious. And this is what he found. The front passenger seat had been removed and it was placed in the rear seat, which we talked about a little bit in the last episode, which looks terrifying. There is a picture, right, on the Instagram of this?
Yes, yes, there is.
Okay. I thought
on the
so,
latest
I just could not remember.
The Ted Bundy picture before, like the one we'll be posting.
Okay, yeah. So he noticed that. And he also found a ski mask, a second mask fashioned from pantyhose, a crowbar, handcuffs, trash bags, a coil of rope, and an ice pick. And he automatically assumed that they were burglary tools. So, you know, Bundy was like, well, no, they're... That's normal stuff. So he said that the ski mask was for skiing. He found the handcuffs in a dumpster and that the rest were just common household items. You know, like a crowbar and an ice pick. I take that wherever I go.
You know?
And also a face mask made of pantyhose. Like, you know, I have that everywhere I go. Every time I take a trip.
That is so weirdly specific. Is the made from pantyhose part. That's what gets me.
It's, yeah, and he's like, no, this is normal. Like, everyone has these.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. So, Detective Jerry Thompson had remembered a similar suspect and car description from the 1974 Duranche kidnapping, which matched Bundy's name from Liz's call in 1974 as well. So, you know, they were able to search the apartment. So, in search of his apartment, they found a guide to the Colorado ski resorts with a check by the Wildwood Inn, a brochure that advertised the Beaumont High School, where play in Bountiful, which is where Deborah Kent had disappeared, which we talked about in the last episode. And so they were like, yeah, this is really suspicious, man. So the police did not have enough evidence to detain him, and so he was released. But Bundy did say later that they had missed a collection of Polaroid photographs of his victims, which he destroyed after he was released. So if only they would have found that, then a lot of the stuff that we're going to talk about later just wouldn't have happened. I know. So, let's keep going. So, he was placed underneath 24-hour surveillance, and Detective Thompson flew to Seattle with two other detectives to interview Liz. So, just so you know, on Wikipedia, it does say her real name, and so I'm just trying to be respectful.
Fair.
And since I did take most of these notes directly from there and from other sources, don't worry. I did not only use Wikipedia. I did fact-check Wikipedia. It's just kind of a convenient place, you know?
It truly is.
I obviously fact-checked it with the Ann Rule book and other online sources, but it does say her last name. So I'm just trying to skip over that every single time. And if I accidentally say it, I'm just going to edit it out. You're welcome for that.
Whatever works,
by the way. Yeah. I mean, do you remember with the J.R. Richardson case? It was like one of our first episodes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Her name wasn't anywhere.
Mm-mm. No. Okay. Anyway, I'm sorry. So they went to interview her, and she said that she had found objects that she couldn't understand in her home and in his apartment. So these items, are you ready for this? All right. Included crutches, a bag of plaster of Paris that he admitted stealing from a medical supply house, a meat cleaver, which had never used for cooking, surgical gloves, an oriental knife in a wooden case that he kept in his... Oriental knife?
What does that even mean?
I have no idea. A fancy knife, I suppose.
All right. Anyways, yeah. Resume.
Okay, thank you. An oriental knife that was never used for cleaning. Whoa, I just skipped up a line. Whoops. Okay, that was in a wooden case that he kept in his glove department. And a sack full of women's clothing.
Ew.
Mm-hmm.
Ew.
So, So, since he was, like, in debt from school and everything like that, you know, Liz just automatically assumed everything that he had been stolen. And so once he confronted her over, or I'm sorry, she confronted him over a new TV and a stereo. And here is a quote. "If you tell anyone, I'll break your fucking neck." So.
And he really will.
I know. That's absolutely the terrifying part. And it's so sad. Because, you know, she's like, okay, well, no, that wouldn't actually happen. But knowing everything that we know now.
He totally would have.
I mean, even if, okay, if David were to say that, I'd be very concerned, you know, and I'm sure you would be with Parker too.
Oh, yes, same. I would be like, excuse me?
Like, pardon you. You're not saying that to me. Yeah. So here's some other things that Liz had said is that he became very upset whenever she considered cutting her hair. And if you remember, her hair was long and parted in the middle, just like the victim's.
Ew.
Apparently, one night, or some nights, this happened more than once, she would wake up in the middle of the night to find him under the covers with a flashlight examining her body.
Ew.
Very ew.
What the heck?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so... Mm-hmm. So the detectives like talked with her a little bit more, and they learned that he was not with her during the Pacific Northwest victims, which were Janice Ott and Denise Nasland, for the Lake Sammamish abductions. So shortly thereafter, she was interviewed by a homicide detective and learned of the existence of Stephanie Brooks and her brief engagement to Bundy around Christmas 1973. So, do you remember hearing about that? That is way back in the first part, which was, feels like a month ago. But do you remember learning about that?
Yes, briefly.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he got engaged to her while with Liz.
Okay.
So, yeah. All right, so in September of that year, Ted Bundy sold his Volkswagen Beetle to just a teenager, and the Utah police immediately, like, impounded it, and they dismantled it and searched it. They found hairs matching samples obtained from Karen Campbell's body, and then later on, they also identified hair strands microscopically indistinguishable from those of Melissa Smith and Carol Durach. FBI lab specialist Robert Neal concluded that the presence of hair strands in one car matching three different victims who would have never met one another would be a coincidence of mind-boggling rarity. So, I mean, obviously, they had no connections to each other. Their only connection, obviously, was Ted Bundy. So, there's so much information here. All right. So, on October 2nd, the detectives put him into a lineup, and Carol Durach immediately identified him as Officer Roseland. So, that was obviously enough evidence to charge him with the aggravating kidnapping and attempted criminal assault in the Durach case. Unfortunately, he was freed on the $15,000 bail paid by his parents.
What the heck?
Mm-hmm. Now listen, I love my parents. I know they love me. If I was in jail... for the aggravated assault, kidnapping, and for a $15,000 bail, they'd be like, no.
Yeah.
Like,
they would not have it at all.
No, they'd be like, cool, I hope you're comfortable in there. You're not coming out, so.
You're not coming out.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Mm-hmm. So he was freed, and so he spent a lot of the time living in Liz's house, which at this point, can you imagine how scared she must have been to have him, living there?
I was scared.
After she, had looked into it, and she learned that, you know, he had cheated on her, and, well, obviously that he killed people, but that wasn't, fully known yet, but yeah. Yeah. So, in February... I did it again. In February 1976, he stood trial for the Carol Duranche kidnapping. And he did waive his right to a jury due to the negative publicity surrounding the case. In June, he was sentenced to a 1 to 15 years in the Utah State Prison, which is awesome and good. In October, he was found hiding in the bushes of the prison yard carrying an escape kit, quote unquote, which was roadmaps, airline schedules, a social security card. And because of this, he obviously spent several weeks in solitary confinement. So later that month, he was charged with Karen Campbell's murder. And after a period of resistance, he waived extradition proceedings and was transferred to Aspen in 1977, January. So a lot just happened there.
For real.
So he went to jail, tried to escape. It didn't work. And here we are. So he was sent back to the Utah prison. Or I'm sorry. No. He was sent to Colorado prison for the trial of Karen Campbell. And serving as his own lawyer allowed for him to appear in court without the leg irons. And it gave him an opportunity to move freely from the courtroom to the law library inside of the courthouse. So, yeah. In an interview, are you okay over there?
Yeah, I'm trying to grasp all this. My goodness.
It's a lot of information to be thrown at you at once. There's a reason I wanted to make it four parts, but I was like, I am sick of looking at this man. We're getting it over with.
Honestly. Now we got to find another picture, dude, a post of his stupid face.
I'm sorry. Yeah, this time it's going to be you looking at him. It's not true. Me.
You actually have an option whether to look at the post or not, so.
It's true. I mean, I'm going to, and I'm going to like it because I, support this podcast, but,
There, yeah.
I'll probably scroll to the next picture and like that one. That way I don't have to like his face. Okay, so, in an interview he gave while in the role of his own attorney, he said, "More than ever, I am convinced of my own innocence." And in June 1977, during a pre-trial window, he escaped by jumping out of the law library window.
Oh, wait, so, I knew this. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Yeah, they do have this in the movie. By the way, if you guys want to watch the movie, it's obviously not lighthearted because it's a Ted Bundy movie. It's really good, though. I think it's very well done.
It's not too gruesome, though. It doesn't really show too much.
Right, which is kind of frustrating considering who it is about, and they don't.
It's also good though for the people who don't like the gruesome,
right?
Yes, but they want to
definitely
the victims and stuff.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
The documentary as well, the conversations with the killer. I don't know if you remember this, but one time before we started the podcast, you were hanging out at my house, and I fell asleep while it was playing. Do you remember that?
Yes. I'm just like, how do you sleep through this?
Apparently, I found it very soothing. I don't. Okay, so anyway, he jumped out of the law library window, and he was captured a week later. So, And December 30th, 1977, he escaped from prison again.
Of course.
This time, he basically starved himself and lost a lot of weight so he could go through the vents, by the way.
So crazy.
Very. Like, he dropped a ton of weight within a very small amount of time. Like, if you look at the pictures, he looks sickly. It's terrifying. So he escaped from prison and made his way to Tallahassee, Florida, where he rented an apartment under the name Chris Hagen. So he managed to sneak in, kind of, like, with the college life that was there. And he managed to pay for food and buy, like, go to bars with stolen credit cards. And apparently, when he was bored, he would duck into lecture halls and he would listen to speakers. So this happened for a little bit. However, yeah, it was very, very soon after this happened in which he was like, well, might as well start killing again. So what we're going to talk about now are going to be some of the most well-known killings of Bundy. They are the Chi Omega murders. You've heard of these, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, on January 15th, 1 week after he arrived in Tallahassee, he went through FSU's Chi Omega sorority house and went through a rear door with a faulty locking mechanism. At 2:45 a.m., he bludgeoned Margaret Bowman, a 21-year-old, with a piece of oak firewood as she slept, and then garroted her with a nylon stocking. He then went into the bedroom of 20-year-old Lisa Levy, and he beat her unconscious and tore off one of her nipples and bit her deeply into the left buttock, sexually assaulted her with a hair mist bottle. In the adjoining bedroom, he attacked Kathy Kleiner and he broke her jaw and lacerated her shoulder. And Karen Chandler, who suffered a concussion, a broken jaw, a loss of teeth, and a crushed finger. So both Chandler and Kleiner survived the attack. And Kathy Kleiner later attributed to their survival of the automobile headlights illuminating the interior of the room and frightening him away. Detectives later determined that it was the four attacks. They took place in a total of less than 15 minutes. 15.
Fifth. Oh.
Yeah. So he left the house, and then he broke into an apartment 8 blocks away, the basement of an apartment, and attacked the student named Cheryl Thomas, and he dislocated her shoulder and fractured her jaw and skull in 5 places. She was left with permanent deafness and an equilibrium damage that ended her dance career. And on her bed, they found a semen stain and a pantyhose mask containing 2 hairs, similar to Bundy's in class and characteristic. Do you want to take a minute?
I do, actually.
Yeah, no, I definitely understand. I kind of want to take a minute as well. Holy shit. So, what do you want to talk about in this minute where we don't think about what we just talked about?
My hamster Venice is doing pretty good.
Oh, is he? Yay. Yeah. I'm happy for him. Has Fig tried to murder him?
But no, like, he's just like old. So I'm like shocked that he's like still kicking, you know?
Oh, good for him. I'm glad he's still
kicking, but
oh, definitely.
It's just
I was over there holding him one day and he just started spewing all of his food onto me and I was terrified.
He's so cute.
I love him. My man terrifies me, but I love him.
He's so cute.
He is. He really is.
I like that he terrifies you. He laughs in your face. Yes,
he, as he should. I shouldn't be scared of him, you know? Like, he should laugh in my face. I agree. Good for him.
I love it.
Okay. All right. Unfortunately, we need to get back into it. So, on February 8th, he drove 150 miles east to Jacksonville in a stolen FSU van. And in the parking lot, he approached a 14-year-old Leslie Parmenter, who was the daughter of the Jacksonville Police Department's chief of detectives. Or, no, I'm sorry. Yes. Holy crap, I can't talk. No, she was the daughter of the Jacksonville Police Department's chief of detectives. I corrected myself.
But anyways, resume.
He identified himself as Richard Burton from the fire department, but retreated when her older brother arrived and challenged him. So he was like about to kidnap this poor 14-year-old girl, and then her older brother showed up and he was like, okay, so I'm going to head out. The older brother. So that afternoon, he backtracked 60 miles westward to Lake City. And this one, another fun trigger warning, is a 12-year-old named Kimberly Diane Leach. So she had asked her homeroom teacher if she could go retrieve her purse from her locker. And she had never returned to class. 7 weeks later, her partially mummified remains were found in a pig farrowing shed near Suwannee River State Park. She had appeared to be raped, with her underwear found near her body containing semen, and killed by violence to the neck with a knife. So on February 12th, he had insufficient cash to pay his overdue rent, or Bundy did, obviously, and so he fled to Tallahassee, driving westward across the Florida Panhandle. 3 days later, at around 1 a.m., he stopped by the Pensacola police officer, David Lee, near an Alabama state line after a wants and warrants check showed his Volkswagen Beetle had been stolen. When he was under arrest, Bundy kicked his legs out from under him and took off running. So he fired a warning shot and by the second round gave chase and tackled him. The two struggled over his gun until they finally subdued and arrested him. In the stolen vehicle were three sets of IDs belonging to female FSU students, 21 stolen credit cards, a stolen television set. They also found dark-rimmed non-prescription glasses, a pair of plaid pants, which he later learned was the disguise worn by Richard Burton of the fire department.
Okay.
So,
Robin.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is I don't know, it's kind of suspicious, right?
Very.
Like the stuff that he had, I'd say so. So Bundy said, "I wish you had killed me," to him.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, so Bundy was still thinking that, you know, he could beat his guilty sentence, you know. Dumbly. Oh, there's an Amber Alert.
I got one too, but my phone was on silent.
Oh no, I'm not smart enough to put my phone on silent
during a podcast.
Stop. quit. Okay, but I have two phones set up in front of me. So I have, you know, one that's uploading information to the other one. So both of them went off. So it was like really intense sounding. Oh my goodness. Okay. So they did have physical evidence that linked him to three murders, the three murders that happened at the sorority house, or it was two murders that happened there. And then they had information to link him to Kimberly Leach, which included a mold of the bite marks, which was on the buttocks of the sorority house victim. So he turned down a plea bargain where he would plead guilty for the two sorority women and Kimberly in exchange for three 25-year sentences. He turned down a plea bargain because he was still so confident that he would get out of it. What?
Yeah, that does, what the heck?
Like, what? You, Yeah, no, that does not. So he ended up going on trial in Florida on June 25th, 1979, for the murders of the sorority woman. And the trial was televised as well. So Bundy was found guilty on both murder charges, because obviously, and was given two death sentences by means of the electric chair. On January 7th, 1980, he went on trial for Kimberly Leach. And this time, he allowed his attorneys to represent him. How kind of him, right? He allowed them to represent him. And they decided on an insanity plea, with the defense was only possible for the amount of evidence in the state had against them. Apparently, his behavior was very different in this trial than the previous one. And he displayed fits of anger, he slouched in his chair, and his collegiate look was sometimes replaced with a haunting glare. Well, unfortunately for Mr. Bundy, he was found guilty and received a third death sentence, as he should have.
For sure.
So, I don't know, there are clips of Ted Bundy online during this, because remember, this was like the first televised trial. This was really big.
Right.
There are some moments in which you can see his face change like so quickly, and it's absolutely terrifying. I was listening to Morbid like a while ago, and they posted a video, I think it was on their Instagram, and they were saying, like, that's so scary because that's probably what the poor women and girls saw before they died.
Ooh, like that. Yeah,
like that.
That is so scary.
It is. Like that terrifying face that he made. Ugh. It's so scary. So, during the sentencing phase, he surprised everyone by calling up Carol Ann Boone as a character witness and marrying her while she was on the witness stand. Yeah, in the movie, yeah, that actually happened, by the way. He married her on the witness stand because a judge was there to witness it, basically. And so it was legal. So, she was still absolutely convinced of his innocence. And later, she actually gave birth to Ted Bundy's child, a little girl.
So weird.
So weird. So later, she did divorce him after, you know, she realized that he was guilty of all of the crimes that he had been charged with, which, you know, obviously he was. So, as I'm sure you know, at the end of like his life, he started like telling everything. And if you guys want to read the book, Ted Bundy, Conversations with a Killer, it does have a lot of that information in there. And I did want to read you a quote from Ted Bundy himself. Hmm. you'll tolerate it because you won't really know what's happening. You know, this 15-year-old girl disappeared. They assume she ran away. She had run away before. But what they don't know is that she's in a ditch somewhere, and they may never know it. I'm sorry, that's just a terrifying sentence.
Okay. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Absolutely terrifying sentence. So, I would highly recommend that book. I would highly recommend The Phantom Prince, My Life with Ted Bundy. And I would highly recommend The Stranger Beside Me by Anne Rule, by the way. Those are all three of the books that I've read in preparation for this. You would most like The Phantom Prince. I can tell you that right now. It's short and
personally?
Yes. You. Okay. Yeah, you personally. It's short and it's more story based than fact based. So
love that.
You're welcome. So Ted Bundy was executed on July 24th in Rayford Rayford Prison in Stark, Florida. So before being put to death, he confessed to the murders of more than 24 women across several states. So his death was highly anticipating, and apparently there were a lot of bumper stickers that said, "I'll buckle up when Bundy does," and "More power to you." And those were seen like across the state of Florida and even on the site of the electrocution itself. So on the day that he was put to death, there were 42 witnesses that gathered to watch the execution of him. And in conversation with radio host James Dobson, not even a day before he was electrocuted, Bundy had pointed out, not to his upbringing, but to the exposure of alcohol and violent pornography as the sources of his evil actions. I'm sorry, what? You're blaming.
That a lot of people like. I mean, yes, porn is gross, yes. But there is a lot of people that watch that, and then literally so many people drink. You can't. Right. Say that this is a reason for a mass murder. That doesn't make any sense.
No, you can't
Because then we would have so many more mass murderers. You know what I'm saying? Like
exactly. And also, well, you can't blame anything. Like, you cannot say, like, oh, well, I got bullied in high school. That's why I murdered 30 people. Like,
Exactly.
No.
That's literally like, their own, like
that's your own psychological
issues.
Yeah, it is. Yes,
can't blame it on other people for you wanting to kill people.
I know. Yeah, no, and you can't blame things like alcohol or violent pornography. Yeah, like you can't. And I feel like him saying this was also like a latch ditch effort to be like, oh no, it wasn't my fault. Like I don't need to be killed. But. You know, he also confessed to multiple more murders before that conversation. So, yeah. So his last words were, Jim and Fred, I'd like you to give my love to my family and friends. So Jim was his lawyer, James Coleman. And Fred Lawrence was the reverend, which whom apparently he cried and prayed all night with. And so he had the black hood put over him, and then he was, well, electrocuted. And after about 1 minute of all of that power, the paramedic took his pulse, and he was declared dead at 7:16 amidst cheering crowd of watchers. Boom. We're done with Bundy.
Yeah, get out of here, Bundy.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So that is one of the biggest serial killers, and now we've covered it. You know, I feel like we should do Ed Kemper again because I did not do justice for that case. He's like just as terrifying as Bundy.
Right. There's a lot in there.
Oh yeah. And I only covered that one in one episode. So I feel like we need to do a redo of him at some point. But yeah, that was Ted Bundy. the biggest piece of garbage who has ever lived.
So crazy.
How are you feeling?
I can't. Ugh.
Yeah.
I don't.
I get it. Just,
It honestly leaves me like speechless because like I don't want.
There's I follow go. You. You're okay. You're good.
There we go.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. No, it's like hard to find words to express how you feel about this because you're like, yeah, I'm glad he died. Oh no, I'm sad about what happened. It's like a big.
There's a yeah. lot like to unfold.
Oh my gosh. Process. So much. Well, yeah. I don't know what to say now. It feels like the end of a series.
This was pretty pretty intense, not gonna lie.
Oh yeah. No, this last episode especially, because we like really went into details.
Maybe if we have a palate cleanser.
Oh yeah. Do you have one?
No. Let me look one up.
Okay. Okay, sounds good. Yes. Because I'm feeling very conflicted about how my voice should be sounding right now.
Okay, let's see. 200 fun facts that'll actually make your life better. Wow.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we
so need. Excited.
Oh, no. The first one is banging your head against a wall for 1 hour burns 150 calories.
Don't do that. Sounds like a terrible plan.
Oh, in Switzerland, it's illegal to own just one guinea pig.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that makes sense. They get so lonely.
They really do.
Wait. Was that the palate cleanser that we used in the episode about Israel Keys, which is called Guinea Pigs Are a Bad Palate Cleanser?
Oh, yes, because we were talking about how they just want to die if they're alone.
Oh, no. I see that episode title all the time, and I'm like, oh, that makes me sad. And then I'll just, like, keep going. And, oh, no, we've brought it back.
Oh, my God. A flock of crows is known as a murder.
Nice.
Oh, the oldest your mom joke was discovered on a 3,500-year-old Babylonian type tablet.
Wait, really? That's hilarious.
I know. I want to know it.
I know. What is the... I'm going to Google that really quickly. Hold on. Oldest yo mama joke. I'm trying to find it. It was
discovered in Iraq in 1976. However, since the tablet has been lost, but the text remains.
Oh, no.
But it doesn't tell me what the... I want to know what the joke is.
I know. I'm trying to find it, too. I'm really sad. Okay, well, here are a few other jokes that were on there. In your mouth and your teeth, constant stared at you, the measuring vessel of your Lord. What is it? Beer. Okay, hold on. Let me. Okay. Here's another old one. This one's kind of funny. This is a bit of political humor. He gouged out his eye. It is not the fate of a dead man. He cut the throat. A dead man. Who is it? A governor.
A dead man?
A governor? I don't know.
I love it.
It's okay.
These are great palate cleansers.
Okay, so thank you guys for listening to our episode.
Right. Okay. Sorry, guys. We hope you enjoyed the series.
Yeah.
And hopefully didn't get too sad, but if you did, we do have those palate cleansers. Just re-listen to them, you know, over and over again. Thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at
Horror Slumber Party Podcast.
And Twitter.
Party_horror.
And you can email us at
horrorslumberparty@gmail.com.
And also our new YouTube channel, which is
Horror Slumber Party Podcast.
Ooh, thank y'all guys so much for listening. You can go on any of these social medias to keep up to what we're posting next. And we hope y'all really...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
We hope y'all enjoyed this series. We'll probably do more series with different people or maybe different haunted places. Not too sure. If you also enjoyed our most recent episode before this one with a collab, we'll try to do more collabs, more interviews, because it was a lot of fun and it let us talk and meet other people who are interested in what we're interested in. So
definitely. Yep.
Anyways,
also check out our Patreon. Check out our Patreon, which Patreon is going to be in the description.
Of course. So all these things, and good night, scary dreams.
Bye.